Welcome to Risk Rustlers, where we celebrate the extraordinary journeys of modern-day risk leaders who embrace the art of grustle, a powerful fusion of grind and hustle. Our podcast dives into the innovative strategies and bold decisions taken by these risk takers, shaping the future of cybersecurity and risk management. Join us as we explore their inspiring stories, insightful advice, and the cutting-edge technologies that define the alternative GRC landscape. Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Risk Rustlers. We have a very peculiar guest with us today. And as you can see from the unusually bright background today, which is a big departure from the boring white background, because I wanted the background to be matching with our guest personality today, who has a rather colorful personality. And honestly, the only other person that I would be happier interviewing today would be Taylor Swift. So Ross is actually the head of product at a cybersecurity startup called Lima Charlie. And he also is the author of a blog called Venture in Security, which is one of the most widely followed blogs. So Ross is sort of a celebrity in the space. So I wouldn't actually introduce Ross on his behalf. Ross, why don't you walk us through what your journey has been like? What led you into looking at the security space?
Yeah, I would love to do it, but frankly, I do feel like you have raised a bar for me. Like I feel like now I need to do something very, very incredible for me.
No, I just wanted your introduction to match your popularity.
Yeah. That is funny. Yeah, so super, super happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation. So as you've said, I'm a head of product at Lima Charlie, an author at Venture in Security, and also doing several other different things. A couple of months ago, we started an angel syndicate for cybersecurity practitioners, doing some advisory work with startups, with VC funds, looking at a lot at the go-to-market, product management, and in general, like doing like operations, doing what needs to be done to make startups successful. So in my case, my journey into cybersecurity has been somewhat unusual, but also, frankly, I think more usual than many people are willing to publicly admit. So I'm a product guy. I'm an operator. I have been in the tech space for over a decade. And I've worked across several different industries. So I worked in e-commerce, retail, wholesale, financial technology for a number of years. And then over time, as I was looking at different areas of technology, a good friend of mine reached out and essentially asked me, "Hey, we're building a cybersecurity company. This is the problem we are trying to solve. Would you join? We need somebody to lead product." And I had a fantastic conversation with the founder. The opportunity made sense. You know, the team was absolutely incredible. So I got super, super excited. I went home. I started doing some research about cybersecurity. And then I pick up, I gave a call my friend, and I say, "I'm not going to do this." So okay. that was my initial experience.
Why did you come to that conclusion? I mean, what made you to believe that?
That's a good question. So, and by the way, like I've been telling this story every time somebody asks me how I got into the cybersecurity space, because for me, I've always considered myself a generalist. So for me, the parts that I'm interested in is go to market, you know, fundraising, operations, partnership, sales, product. So all the parts of building a company that do not actually involve writing code, which is something that I am terrible at. Like I'm not a developer. I've learned some basic, you know, HTML, CSS, you know, some basic SQL, but you do not want me to code. And so for me, coming from different industries into cybersecurity, the part that sort of spooked me at the beginning was just the number, like was just this complexity, or at least perceived complexity, and also the number of abbreviations all around. So, you know, when you come in, like I've worked in financial technology, I've worked with mortgages, worked with investments, you know, bringing products in different verticals of fintech to the market. And typically when you look at the product, you can understand what it does. like, hey, yeah, this solution helps a mortgage broker to submit an application to the lender to get, you know, to get it underwritten, to get it approved, to pull the credit report, and to ensure that the person will, as the outcome, will get the mortgage. Or, you know, if you look at the CRM space, hey, this tool helps us to send, you know, marketing campaigns to people. Yeah. So there is typically a fairly easy way to build that foundational understanding of the space. But when I started to look at cybersecurity, the very first things I was faced with were MDR, NDR, XDR, SIEM, SOAR, CSPM, DSPM, and on and on and on and on and on. Yeah. And I was like, okay, but what does it do? And so for me, the sort of the confusion number one and just the complexity number one was trying to decipher and essentially interpret what do each of those abbreviations stand for. The second layer of complexity was to actually get an understanding, again, as a product person, like that was the role that I was looking to play at Lima Charlie, what do different products do in this space? And so there, I was faced with the challenge of even getting access to the tools. Because, you know, cybersecurity tools, like there are many reasons why, but security practitioners cannot typically easily just get an access to the tool. You have to book a demo, you have to attend a call, you have to talk to 5, 10, you know, 15 different salespeople. And so for me, I just didn't have time to do it. So I was like, okay, let me find those couple of tools that I can actually create an account with and see how they work. And then very soon I came to realize that not only it's hard, not only there is this complexity around abbreviations, not only it's hard to gain access to tools, but what also is the case is that once you do get access to tools, you realize that there is so much overlap between different products and different categories that the boundaries between what product X does and what product Y does, which claim to be products from different categories, the boundaries are just so blurry. And so for me at the time, it was like, okay, so where do I go from here? Like, if I want to focus on product in cybersecurity, what does this actually mean? Like, how many hurdles do I have to overcome for me to even make sense of this? So that was why initially I said no, but as history has shown, I did go back on my decision, and fast forward years later, here I am.
I think we like to believe that most of our decisions can be potentially premeditated, but the best ones are taken out of impulse and gut, right? I mean, your best judgment advise you against taking up cybersecurity, but you ended up taking it anyway. So,
yeah. So you see, for me, I think the part that ended up, like one of the biggest factors that ended up changing my decision at the time was the fact that I caught myself on this thought that the most impactful decisions I made in life have always been the ones with the most uncertainty and the ones where the chances of success were probably not the highest, but then they also would pay off the most. And so when I was making that decision, I was like, am I betraying my usual approach to decision making? Like, am I saying no simply because this is too hard? I was like, no, I can't allow that to happen. So I went back.
That's a very interesting way of taking decisions. That's a very peculiar framework, but seems to be working well for you. So what led you to start blogging about cybersecurity? And what was the journey like building Venture in Security?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So when I started in cybersecurity, because I was new to this space, frankly, I have been following the industry for some time before, but never enough to really go deeper. And when I started, what I needed to do is to get an understanding of the foundations and have the industry functions very, very, very quickly. Like, I didn't have the luxury of coming in and saying, hey, you know, I've been in the industry for 25 years. I know everyone and everything. No, I didn't. So I needed, like, I had that pressure, like self-imposed pressure to get up to speed quickly. And for me, the ways I have done it before and the ways I have decided to do it here was to read a lot, go to events, go to different meetups, meet people. Yeah. reach out, ask questions, and just like be fairly agenda free, really do what I can do to piece different things together and to start learning. So very quickly, I came to realize that because cybersecurity is such a technologically complex space, there is a lot of content, there is a lot of information about the technical side of security. Like if you are looking to, like if you are, for example, an aspiring security engineer or a detection engineer, you can get yourself into a community which can help you and sort of
point. Which is very focused on that specific use case.
Exactly. And you can get access to different tools around that specific problem. But as soon as you look at the business side of the industry, that's where really the gap is. Because, frankly, I think, one, there are very few people in this space, this wasn't the learning that I had at the beginning. This was something that kind of came later. But there are fairly few people, or at least a relatively small percentage of people, who actually have a holistic understanding of how the industry functions. And again, like this isn't a judgment on anybody's intelligence or anything similar. It's that, like in the day-to-day, people don't really have time to think about like, hey, how are different pieces come together? Like what, there are channel partners. Like what are the different types of channel partners? What's happening between them? Like what, where do they work together? Where do they compete? Oh, like who else is out there? Okay, well, there are, I don't know, service providers. How do they fit into this picture? How about VCs? How about the investors? What are the different type of investors investing in the cybersecurity space? Like, what are their motivations? What are their networks? Like all of the different participants of the ecosystem. The ecosystem, which I must admit, is very complex. Much more complex than in many other industries. Like one of the examples that I like to bring up is the fact that I have not seen any other industry where the mobility between private and public sector would have been so high. You know, typically people who work for the government, they stick with the government and they stay in the public service. People who work in the private sector, they stay in the private sector. But in cybersecurity, what you see a lot is this
there's a very fluid movement. Yes. Yeah.
And there, like this is just one example. Then you have the fact that people come into cybersecurity from different backgrounds. You know, some are, ex law enforcement. Some are ex like compliance practitioners. Somebody is an ex software engineer. Somebody else was an incident responder. There are also lawyers who did their education in law, who passed bar,
privacy, liability,
exactly. So you get people with so many different backgrounds, and as a result, it takes a long time and a lot of effort to really piece together different perspectives and to build a holistic understanding of the industry. But I needed to move fast, like I needed to get up to speed with how the industry functions. So I started meeting a lot of people, started reading a lot, like trying to like making notes,
trying to distill the learnings and make it simple for people to consume.
Well, not quite. I was trying to distill the learnings to make it simple for myself to consume. Like there was no desire to start a blog. If you were to ask me, like I don't know, 3-5 years from now, would you start a blog? I would be like, why? Like, do I have too much time?
I like a general non-romanticized approach to things. I mean, yeah, just things has happened. One thing led to the other. I mean, and that's actually true. I mean, this pragmatic approach is true for most cases, right? I mean, we romanticize things in retrospect. So
yeah, you see, I genuinely believe that life is simple. So what I try to do is do more of what works, and iterate or drop the stuff that doesn't. And so in case with the blog, like I've tried other things, for example. Like I've tried many other projects and initiatives, even in cybersecurity, and I will talk about it soon. But in the context of the blog, I published an article and I got a very interesting response. Like people reached out saying, hey, this is quite interesting, you know, thank you so much for sharing. And I was like, okay, well, I guess somebody found it useful. That's fine. And then a few weeks later, I published another article And then more people found it useful. And I was like, okay, well, I guess it, probably I can do a bit more of it. So I started writing a bit more, and I got about 500 subscribers, and then 1,000, and then 2,000, and then 3,000. Yep. And somewhere along the way, I sort of accepted the fact that, well, this means I have a blog, and yep. this means it is a weekly blog, and this means that people expect for me to write it. And so I'm just going to go and keep doing it, because it like I have a lot to share.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of ideas and inspirations and feedback from people reading it. So why not do it? I think this simplicity, it kind of applies to any other area. Like when you think about, you know, building a startup or building a company, like, hey, let's identify an idea.
Yeah.
Let's try it. Like, let's see if there is interest. Okay. Well, there isn't. Well, let's look for ways to, you know, to iterate. Like maybe there is a different perspective we can take. Maybe there is a different angle.
So that Ross, actually brings me to a very interesting question, right? So you mentioned 2-3 things, right? One is the fact that cybersecurity has practitioners who come from a very eclectic set of backgrounds. I mean, there's lawyers, there's SOC analysts, there's pen testers, right? They're defensive security people. And you also talked about, you know, thinking about things from first principles, being iterative, right? Now, cybersecurity it's been a space where there are lots of problems to solve, and it's an area which is ever evolving. So there's always opportunity to do more, right? Now, for people who, you're an angel investor yourself too, right? So for people who want to start up in the space, there's one end of the extreme where, you know, there's people who've seen a problem for 30 odd years, been CISOs, career CISOs,
yeah.
and then they want to start up companies. And then there's the other end of the extreme where young people want to sort of, they want their piece of the gold rush. And they start up companies because they see a lot of companies raising money, companies doing well, and for good reason. It is an inspirational space. I found it inspirational too. But where do you strike the balance? What's the middle ground that you've seen work best in terms of, because too much baggage can lead to a very myopic view of how things should be handled, but too little experience can also, it could make the whole journey of building something ground up extremely long and excruciatingly painful, right? So where do you see the balance being struck?
That's a great question. And frankly, I don't think it's the one where anybody can offer a fantastic, like the perfect answer. And if somebody could, I think we would have already had a formula about like, what are the people we should be investing in? The reality is we kind of don't. The way I think about it is this, if you sort of break, like if you take it back to the first principles, like what are the problems we're trying to solve? Like what are the key ingredients that people who have a higher potential to be successful should have in any industry? And when you think about the day-to-day, when you think about the consumer space, for example, you wake up in the morning, you go about your day, you face different situations, and sometimes you run into problems. Anybody can think, oh, this is a problem. Like, let me see if somebody, like if this is something we can solve and if we can do it at scale and if there is somebody else interested in the solution and blah, blah, blah. So when you think about the consumer space, it's literally anybody who can start something in the industry. As soon as you start to look at the B2B space, well, it does become a bit more complex because unless you have, first of all, you better have an understanding how the businesses function. Like yeah. you may not necessarily be a deeply, you know, specialized practitioner in a certain field, but you better understand how do companies function? How do they make decisions? How, like, what does it mean to get an enterprise to buy a product? Like what is the complexity involved? Like, what is the purchasing department? How do they fit in? Like, what is the compliance department? Like, what is the finance team? How do they all fit together? So having that foundational understanding is important. And that is why when it comes to cybersecurity, I believe that, not only I believe, but what I do see is that it's very hard for somebody to start a security company out of the university. It's a very it's a deeply technical problem yeah. that happens like on the that people face on the back end of the business, And so unless you've been there, unless you first of all can understand the complexity, but also understand the path for people to buy a solution to the problem. Like you're not going to sit in an MBA class, you know, having done an undergrad in comp sci and come up with a solution to vulnerability management. Like it just doesn't happen. So on one end of the spectrum, it's very hard to start something in security if you do not have experience in security. But on the other hand, I believe it's also very hard to start something innovative if the only thing you've ever done was security, and if you've spent 25, 30 years in the industry. Again, there are exceptions to each of those.
Of course, of course.
But I think it also depends on another factor. And the way I often describe it is that for many people, 20 years of experience is 1 year repeated 20 times.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're somebody who has spent 25 years of experience in cybersecurity, but you've worked in different startups, you've worked in different industry verticals, you've been on different sides of the security team, you've been an individual contributor, you've been a manager, you've maybe been a CISO, you've been doing some advisory work with startups, you've been working with VCs. The kind of understanding you will have is very different than if all you have been doing is doing your work, getting promoted, and then eventually you became a CISO. And you maybe worked in two companies. It's much harder for you to get exposure to problems that are commonly experienced by different companies in the industry. And frankly, you see the other side of this gap a lot when you look at the companies started in the Bay Area. In particular, if you're a security engineer who has worked in a large bank and who has worked at Google, the way you're going to be approaching the problem is going to be very different than if all companies you've ever worked for were the cloud native, cloud first, the Bay Area enterprises. Because if you have experience working in retail or in large financial institutions, you know that the vast majority of the companies are not exactly at the same level of technological advancement as Netflix or Google. Right. And so you will be building a solution that's optimized for
the gold standard of companies, which is not going to be representative enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you kind of you have all of those different dimensions. So you do need somebody who has the experience in the industry. You do need somebody who is actually interested in building and interested in trying different approaches. While all of that is true, you also want somebody who is open, who has that level of humility to admit that they don't know everything. They might be good at their respective area, but that does not make them just, the all-knowing god of the startup world. So they have that humility to go out, to seek mentors, to ask questions, to look for an advice externally, to go to their investors and to admit that, hey, I need help in this area and this is what I've tried and this is what's working, what's not. So you need people who match a lot of those criteria. And frankly, if you look at the founder pipeline if you think about it as a funnel, then at the end of that funnel, you have a fairly limited number of people who are actually starting companies in this space. And that's why you also see so many repeat founders in the industry, because once you've done it once, you've built that network and you know the people, the buyers, you know what resources are available to you. And the chances of you being successful the second time are much, much higher in any industry, but especially in cybersecurity, where so much of the buying process relies on trust, relies on people knowing who you are and just being willing to place a bet on you.
Okay, so now you alluded to various decision makers in the buying process. There's a security team, there's a governance team, there's maybe the CFO also, right? So if I have to be a little provocative here and ask you, if let's say I'm a cybersecurity founder, I'm trying to get the attention from the CISO, because the CISOs are inundated with various pitches now, right? from competing tools that claim to do different things, but are just essentially different acronyms. So if I have to ask you as a founder, I have to get the CISO's attentions. I have to get the decision maker's attention. What would be the worst possible advice you could give me? What would be the absolutely horrendous advice that you could give me that would completely sabotage my chances of getting the CISO's attention?
Give them a call. I don't know. Like get like hire.
What would the message be? I mean, maybe a fluffy message.
Oh, like it. Frankly, I don't even think it matters. Just like the absolutely worst advice is to hire like an external BDR team and just give them a list of people or give them the type of profile of the companies you want to target and just have them start calling everybody in that company.
Oh, that's a bad approach. Okay, can you talk a bit more about that? Because a lot of companies would, yeah.
Yeah, so the way, like, frankly, the way I think about it is this. The first point would be, what does it mean? Like, when you say, imagine you're a founder and you're looking to get in front of the CISO, what is the additional context there? I think too many people do not drill down deep enough to understand what problem are they solving. And who are the types of personas or the types of customer segments that care about that problem the most?
Yeah.
See, there are too many founders who go out and say, hey, like we've got the vulnerability management for enterprises. It's like, okay, well, that's great. But if you are an early stage company, if you don't really have like a strong customer, if you don't have the strong sales pipeline, where do you start? And so saying that we solve a problem for enterprises, it's the same as saying that we've got this great solution for anybody, which typically means that no, it's a solution for nobody. Because so for me, the step number one would be to ask the founders, like, hey, can you do some closer, like, can you have a closer look at the kind of companies, the kind of people you've actually been successful to selling, and look what is common among those people? Are they coming? Yeah. Like, are they all from the same? Like, maybe the majority come from the same industry vertical. Maybe you find that, well, no, it's actually a CISO that just started their job within like 3 months at a new company. Or maybe it is for some reason, you have a lot of traction with companies that have like 2 to 5 people on the IT team and are only now bringing in somebody who is going to be focused on security. Or maybe basically get a deeper understanding as to what is it that actually makes you successful. Like, why is it that there is a specific type of CISO would be a good prospect for you to target? So that to me is frankly the number one. Well, not really the number one. The number one is even to figure out like what.
So you're essentially talking about not trying to make an enterprise successful as a whole, because that's a very open-ended problem to solve, but to pick the stakeholder that you want to make successful and tailor the messaging exactly according to that.
So that is probably a part of it. I think the way I think about it is understand the buying journey for your specific type of solution and for your specific type of problem you're solving. You see, if you are, like, and then map out that buying journey, understand who are the different people involved, what stakes do they have, which of those people impact the buying decision more than others, and what can you offer for those people to actually have them champion your solution? Like, for example, if you're selling a product that is about, security training for employees, well, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to go to CISO. Maybe you can find it, like if you look at the buying journey and you figure out that, hey, you know, HR and like people team is a part of this process. Maybe you can find a way to talk to HR and you might even get more success with doing that than you would. Or maybe there is a compliance or governance team, or maybe it's not even a team, but hey, if we are a technical solution and again, another like absolutely basic example, but let's just say we are building a solution which requires technical engineering talent in order for that solution to be adopted. Well, that means when you go on LinkedIn and you use your either Sales Navigator or whatever people use these days, you know automatically that if you're looking at the company that doesn't have anybody who is a security engineer, security architect, you know, detections engineer, or somebody technical, the chances of them adopting your product are going down dramatically. So it's building that foundational understanding, and then from there figuring out what is the best way to actually get in front of the people. And I'm not saying decision makers, I'm specifically saying people, because getting in front of the decision maker is a very ambitious goal. But the reality is that if CISOs were to take all the demos that startups are asking them to take, that would have probably been their full-time job.
Got it. So you're saying it's more prudent to find somebody in the organization who's going to get, or whose life is going to become easy because of the solution, and they can be the champions and the endorsers to the CISO, who's ultimately probably going to be the decision maker.
So you see, what I am saying is that if you know, like if you have the understanding of your customer, if you have the understanding of the buyer's journey, you can try and design different experiments and see which of them works. Maybe this is the type, let's just say you're a product that offers a lot of the value proposition around the cost reduction. Maybe there is a universe in which somebody on the finance team would actually get interested and forward it, you know, to the CISO. Maybe what you would be interested in doing is, instead of going and exhibiting at Black Hat, maybe you would want to go and exhibit at the conference for financial professionals.
That's a little unorthodox, by the way, but it makes complete sense.
Right. If you're selling to banks, do you belong at the RSA or do you belong at conferences for bankers? That's how I think about it. So for me, start with the problem you're trying to solve. Understand what is it you're solving, for whom, who cares? Like really, who gives a shit about what you're doing? If it's another, but to me, whenever I see a startup that just says, oh, you know what? Yeah, we've got this cool solution. We're just going to go and schedule a demo with the CISO and we'll get in. It's like 99% chances like that's just going to go nowhere.
Got it. Makes perfect sense. I have one question here on one of the blogs that you've written about. So the general dichotomy between a cybersecurity services company and a cybersecurity products company. Yeah. And how at some point of time there's going to be some degree of convergence between the two. So how do you see this? And not a lot of people talk about it. I don't know, maybe it's because it's a difficult topic to perhaps talk about. And even companies that have a service component to their delivery might not want to talk about it because maybe downstream it has an impact on multiples or whatever, right? But I actually want to address this and talk about this. Right? It is somewhat of at least a tiny elephant in the room. Where do you see this convergence happening? Because we see a lot of very promising cybersecurity services companies also selling at very high gross margins, extremely sticky customers, right? Which is exactly the kind of problem that you would be wary about if you're dealing with a services company. But we also see that services companies are building a component of, or at least productizing some part of what they've been doing repeatedly to generate recurring revenues. So where do you see this convergence happening and how should companies think about it?
Yeah. So it's funny because I did a post about it on LinkedIn and I'm actually process. I have a draft article. It's not published yet, but it will be published in the.
I'm going to charge you for the product placement, which was completely unsolicited. But fair.
Yeah. No. So this is I did look into this question quite a bit, and I find it frankly fascinating. Honestly, I find many questions in the industry fascinating. And to your point, very few people are actually talking about it. Like very few people are actually looking at the trends that go beyond. Just like, hey,
narrow definitions. Yeah, exactly.
There is this new abbreviation and it's getting traction in the market. But when you look at the market from a more foundational standpoint, then yes, like 100%, like one of the trends that I do see happening is this sort of enmeshment of like product and services. So the product and service providers, they're sort of becoming this one of the same, this like, They're coming together, they're mixing into what I would call like solutions, like cybersecurity solutions. Mm-hmm. And so frankly, the reasons, and it's very, very logical. Like in my view, it just makes sense. So on the services side, like service aside, the service providers, they're obviously looking to improve the unit economics. Like,
yeah.
You know, the services scale like fairly linearly. You know, you've got more customers, it means you need to hire more people to deliver the service. And so if you can productize a part of it, like if you can find a way to automate, but also make it predictable for yourself, then well, you can improve the unit economics and your margins from there. If you're looking to raise venture funding, like, you know, venture capital firms are like the economics of the VC space makes it hard for VC to bet on services because the exits, like the exit multiples are much lower than at the product company. So if a service company is looking to attract VC funding and has that ambition to grow, then getting the product component, it becomes almost a must.
Yeah.
From there, you've got the fact that customers are looking for, even if you're a customer of a service provider, you would be looking to get some visibility into what the hell is the service provider doing in my environment. Hmm. So, and I don't want to say the word dashboard because, you know, it's
a cliche.
It is a cliche, but is there a place I can go to see what's happening in my organization? Yes, you're saying, you know, you're keeping me safe, but what is there a place where I can see some stats? And so there is that like layer of visibility that is also impacting and the trend and drives the service providers to do more of the to emphasize building products.
Yeah.
And also reducing the complexity. So a lot of the service providers, they've accumulated decent customer bases, but a lot of what they're doing is still manual. So instead of having to hire more people, they're looking to automate processes, they're looking to streamline processes. And one way to do it is through introducing more of a productized experiences. Also, on the same topic of reducing the complexity, see, for a customer these days, if a customer wants to, you know, do some, you know, comparison shopping and have a look, compare the prices the different vendors provide, if you're a pure service provider and you cannot offer, you know, the per unit cost, it becomes hard for the customer to do that comparison shopping. But if you can productize your services and say, hey, yes, we are a services company. We, for example, we provide an MDR, but it is, you know, like $5 per endpoint. $10 per endpoint, $20 per endpoint.
There is a clear way to build an NRR, I guess.
Exactly. So like the pricing becomes more predictable and it's easier for companies to understand, okay, if we scale the deployment, here is what the cost is going to look like. So for me, that's on the services side. On the product side, well, on one hand, product companies, if they're not offering services, they're leaving the money on the table. So that's the very simple argument. Like if you are, you know, a big EDR provider, or if you are a big, you know, X something provider, you already have customers who came on board and who are willing to pay for the level of service you offer.
Yeah.
However, some of those customers may be very well interested in upgrading, you know, the types of service they're paying pay a bit more money. And get access to the team, like get somebody to actually pay attention to their specific environment, help them configure the product, or wherever the case may be. So adding the services component is a great way to capture that additional revenue. So there is this there is this factor, and on top of that, another factor which I would consider is that there is the growing understanding in the industry that products can only help with so much. Like you can only automate so much. Having somebody dedicated to helping you, one, implement the product well.
And is it because environments are inherently heterogeneous from company to company, or is it because there's limited understanding of how to navigate that change, how to remove friction between the various stakeholders while implementing a product? What do you think drives this trend?
I think it's a couple of things. Like one is that... I think more mature security teams and more mature security buyers, they know that products are like a security product that whenever it's implemented across, you know, thousands and thousands of different customer environments, it's going to be the same generic product. So there is a need for somebody like to, you know, to turn the knobs and to customize that implementation to the individual customer's environment to begin with. But then on top of that, there is also an increased understanding that, or at least maybe I'm not like 100% confident to what degree this is a shared understanding, but there is a layer of problems that can be solved with automation. There is a layer of problems that can be solved with, you know, with the advances of artificial intelligence and machine learning. But there's also a layer of those like smaller number of problems that you need a human to actually pay attention to and say, hey, what's happening? So, and lastly, I think one of the biggest drivers for product companies adopting or introducing the service offerings is the area of incident response. You cannot automate the incident response.
Which is becoming even more relevant in the light of the new SEC guidelines, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Like you cannot automate.
Because even though it applies to publicly traded companies, but at some point that will trickle down to their vendors and their MSAs too. Just the way Socto also did eventually.
Yeah.
It does trickle down. Makes sense.
So there are many interesting trends. There are many interesting observations about the industry. Check out the blog.
Yes. So actually, I'm coming to that. So again, thank you later for the unsolicited product placement. But why don't you talk about your blog for a minute? Would love for people to find you. And anybody that's raising the first round of investment, building a cyber company, or just generally want to get to know about the space a little bit more in terms that is relatively jargon free, more lucid to understand, would absolutely encourage you to reach out to Ross. But Ross, would love for you to speak about your blog for a minute before we close.
Yeah. So what I try to do is, as you said, I try to look at complex problems. I try to share some of the observations I have about the industry and do it in the way that's actually accessible. You see, I'm a very big believer that adding abbreviations and sprinkling it with industry jargon and adding complex terms that you need to look at before you can understand what a certain sentence is saying is just a very dumb way of communicating in general. Like it doesn't show, like it, unlike what some people assume, it doesn't portray the understanding of the topic. It covers up the absence of that understanding, at least the way I see it. And also, as you can hear, like English is my third language. So I just like simplicity. Like, yeah. If I'm talking like and the same applies to my blog, but also the same applies to my expectations when I'm talking to the prospective founders of early stage companies. Like, if you cannot explain to like a regular person who has some experience in the tech space, but who isn't like very, very, very deep in your specific area of the domain expertise, if you cannot explain what you're doing, then how are you going to be selling to CISOs, some of whom come from, you know, from law enforcement background? They just like they haven't, you know, had a need to develop that specific technical understanding. Like some of the CISOs come from, you know, from I don't know, some of the CISOs did like bachelor's in astronomy and then ended up in compliance and now they're looking at the most technical and complex areas of security. So you need that intellectual flexibility for people to sort of build the grasp. But anyway, going back to the blog, check out the blog, looking at different topics around cybersecurity space. So quite a bit about investing, like raising capital, but also investing in cybersecurity startups, trends related to data gravity, building, I guess, the number of security vendors and what it means and why is it the case and how to deal with it as a founder. The channel partners, the sort of the maturation of security, the engineering centric approaches, like looking at the industry more broadly and trying to pinpoint the problems that I believe are hard and worth talking about.
All right. Thank you, Ross. Thanks a lot for taking the time. And to our viewers, thanks a lot for listening. Stay curious. We'll be back soon.
Bye. Thank you so much.